Okay, today I'm talking to Paula Crofts. She's a farmer down in Mount Macedon, Victoria, Australia, and she's a regenerative farmer. Paula, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Great. Can we start with a little bit about you and your background, and how did you get into farming?
Okay, so I suppose farming is my second or third career, we might say. Prior to this, I had a career in the mining industry, basically. And then when I returned to, after living overseas for 20 years, I returned to Australia and had a small son who wouldn't eat any food. And so I had to get him to eat some food. So we bought a small 9-acre property. And the agreement with my son was that whatever we grew, he would eat. And it started from there with three chooks and a couple of cows. And we have now moved to a much larger property, well, larger property, small, still small, it's only 74 acres, and are still in the Mount Macedon Ranges area, which is an hour from Melbourne. And he still eats everything that we grow as per the agreement.
That's great. And what a way to solve a problem of a fussy toddler eater. So that's great. What exactly was your approach back then, and what is your approach now in terms of farming and growing the type of food that you'd want to feed to your son?
Okay, so I suppose things have changed a lot from so that was 12 years ago that we started. And initially it was growing things very conventionally, feeding conventionally. And that started my journey. I was lucky to meet some friends who were also interested in what we were growing and what we were doing. And being a single mum, they would come up and give us a hand. And so I started to learn about soil health. I learned about Joel Salatin, and how he was moving his cows and chickens and how he was doing everything. And then I did one of the very first Rex courses by the Regrarians, and that really was a huge eye-opener, and it was a way to see that there was a different way of farming than the conventional way of farming, and that between those two things really started me on my journey to learn about soil health, how to regenerate the earth. Looking at soil is really, it's living and it's full of fungi and microorganisms, and it's taking carbon dioxide from the atmosphere and putting it into the earth. And so that really started my journey. And I suppose it started with the chickens. We now have more than three chickens. We do about 200 dozen eggs a week. And what we do is we do soy-free. So, and I decided soy-free after some research, and that was looking at what Western A Price has put out a lot of information about soy and what a chicken eats. And there's lots of research that was done in Japan. We decided on soy-free food, and then we had to find the soy-free organic food. And we've been able to source that from Queensland, from Country Heritage. So we get that sent down. And then I started looking at not only giving them the soy-free organic food, it was how we were going to move them around the pastures, what good that did for the pastures. And we've also gone into fermenting organic wheat every day on a daily basis for the hens as well, because we know that fermented foods is good for our gut health, so it's also good for the chickens' gut health. And that's been fantastic for the hens, and they line up. Basically, they're sitting at the edge of the fence every morning waiting for their fermented food, and if you're a bit late, there's a lot of noise that goes on.
Great.
They're quite demanding, quite demanding.
Yeah. I was just going to say, for the listener who isn't aware, Joel Salatin is one of the, I guess, forerunners or real standard bearers for the regenerative agriculture movement in the US, and he owns and runs Polyface Farms. And he's put out a lot of information and really open sourced a lot of information regarding the construction of portable hen houses and infrastructure in terms of rotational grazing. So highly recommend anyone have a look at Joel's work. But sorry, Paula, go on.
Yeah. So look, and what we decided to do was I was working full time up until 12 months ago as well as doing this. So I decided that we needed to use technology and with our hens, so we had to use a lot of technology, and that's with having the chicken caravans with the roll-away nesting boxes that keeps the eggs clean so the hens can't sleep inside the nesting boxes, the electric fences. We have cameras on the vans so that we can check on them any time of the day, which is great. And we also have the Marema dogs as guardians and protecting them.
Yeah.
So really using everything that's out there to try and keep it as simple as possible, given that you're continually moving and everything has to be movable. So that's the water, that's the food, everything has to be able to be moved.
Yeah. And the idea of the soy-free feed is a very, very interesting one, and it speaks to the idea of what we eat as humans is that the quality of that food is going to be a function of what that animal has itself eaten. And the most the mainstream or the most commonly bought eggs that you'll find, the hens are fed commodity grain with whatever has been added to that grain or whatever has been used to raise that grain, whether that's contaminants or herbicides, or in the case of soy, the nature of that soy itself, which has a phytoestrogenic effect when consumed, meaning that it acting like estrogen in the body and is undesirable source of extra estrogen load for both men and women. So and I can testify to the quality of the tall poppy eggs. They're absolutely amazing, incredibly delicious eggs. I want you to explain exactly the idea or the concept behind the rotation of the hen house and the idea of moving them regularly. Can you tell us why that is so important?
Yeah, look, and it's been really, really evident on the farm that we're currently on. When I bought the property, it hadn't had any herbicides or pesticides for at least 4 years before I bought it. That's what I can say that it didn't have. But the pasture was very poor. The soils, it's a mixture of red volcanic and black clay, but the pasture was very, very poor. So by moving, the chickens actually provide nutrients for the soil, and the chickens will also open up the soil and allow the water to get in. But chickens can be very destructive, so you do have to keep the chickens continually moving. And what we've found is that, I suppose, in the last 4 years, we've had probably three rotations around the whole 74 acres of the hens. And when you start to graze, you can see how the grass is changing. So initially we had lots of fog grass and sweet vernal, and now that's reduced and we're starting to see the rise and the clovers come through. And that's all been done by the management of the land. That's by the rotational grazing of the beef and also the hens. And the idea behind it is that you can't produce I don't think you can produce nutrient-dense food if you don't have nutrient-dense soil. So the idea is to keep that nutrient moving and cycling around the property so that you don't have a build-up in one particular area. And that's what the chickens do by having the electric mesh fences that you're continually moving them and you move the house within there. What we've found is that when that grass regrows, you can see exactly where the house has been on that little patch of land, because it's not like a spreader, if you like, that spreads the manure evenly. The chickens wherever the house was that night, there's a big chunk, and then you move to the next spot the next night and there's another chunk, and then they'll walk around and they'll be pooping everywhere. So it's not consistent. But where the house has been, and you can see it quite clearly as the grass regrows, it's very lush and green, and then you'll put the cows into a strip to graze, and the first place they go is to that really bright green strip, and you have to take the cows off that bright green strip pretty quickly, because otherwise they just take it back to bare earth and they'll leave everything else around it. So it's been a good learning experience with the hens. And the cattle.
Yeah, I mean, for the listener, what we can conceive of what you're doing is you're using the hens as a tool of land management and a tool of improving the quality of the soil. And that is a complete paradigm shift to your mass-produced caged eggs, where, you know, a bunch of unhappy hens are sitting indoors, you know, obviously in cages, their manure not being utilized for any productive or organic reason. It's just probably being discarded. And the bird lives a sad life, you know, out of the sun, not getting any vitamin D, the whole time. So this is a fascinating, and holistic approach to raising hens and growing eggs, which is not only are you giving them their natural, a natural environment where they're exposed to soil, they're able to eat grubs, they're able to get sun, but you're also using them and their byproducts of them, of the hens to fertilize the soil and the land for the cattle. So, I mean, it's elegant and it's brilliant in its elegance. And it makes so much sense. And I think it's just, it's a great way of actually farming. So tell me about, so you've moved the hens off, the land behind the hen house is thrived. And then tell me about how the cattle moved and how do you do that? And how often are you moving them?
Okay. So when we first got here, we had nine very large paddocks. So we have spent a lot of time increasing that nine paddocks to 21 paddocks is where we're at the moment. We've still got a little bit more work to do that we want to keep going. And then we've put water in all of those 21 paddocks. And then we use, again, technology with electric fences, movable electric fences, and we will then divide up each paddock. So it's not just that they get 21 paddock. We're actually moving the cattle every afternoon. And so we'll try and when we're putting up the fences, so I'll try and go and put up two or three fences in a row. So it's quite, so especially if I'm busy and I know I've got other things that I need to do, I'll put up three or four fences so they're ready to go and basically just move the cattle through those paddocks, and making sure that they can't go back onto their favourite, that they have to, I suppose, eat their Brussels sprouts and cauliflower, not just the ice cream. That's a good way of looking at it, is that you want them to eat a really big salad bar of all different grasses. You don't want to just a monocrop, so I wouldn't want to just sow rye or clover into my pasture, because what you want to do is have a great variety of different grasses that are growing on your property. And there should be enough of a seed bank there to get that. It just takes time and you have to be patient and watch it change. And different seasons will produce different grasses as well.
Yeah. So the actual movement of the cattle allows them to get fresh grass every day and non-selectively basically eat down a certain patch of the ground. Is that correct?
That's correct. And believe me, if we're not out there, and we always move in the afternoon because that's when the Brix level is the highest or the sugar level is the highest in the grass, is in the afternoon. So the idea, the philosophy behind that is that the cows get moved in the afternoon. They will move on to a new patch. They'll spend the late afternoon and the evening eating, and then in the heat of the day, if it's a warm day, not that we've had very many so far, but then they'll sit and digest and be ready to move onto the next patch. That's the philosophy behind that. This year has been particularly challenging. We're at 650 metres, so we're cold, and we have had significant rain. Not floods like other people, but significant rain, which has made it very challenging. I think the other day I was out in a paddock and the grass was, well, it was chest high, but wow. There was water that running through the bottom of it, about that much water running through the bottom of it. It was wow. Incredible. I've never seen anything like it, but, you know, we've got some great grass. So, and
yeah.
That forced me to have to move the cattle twice a day just because there was so much water. So they were taking the top off and just keep them moving so that we didn't hug up the ground too much.
Yeah. And for the person listening to this podcast who maybe buys their meat from Woolworths or Coles, can you explain a little bit about the conventional agricultural methods by which that beef was probably raised compared to your methods that we've just talked about of rapid rotation?
Okay, so generally cows will be put in generally in one big paddock and left there and until the farmer decides that they should move on to another paddock. That could be a month, it could be 2 months, however long. Those cattle are probably wormed because they'll have a worm burden, which is another chemical. They'll probably be putting some sort of fertilizer onto their property to make the grass grow. Probably a synthetic type fertilizer generally. Who knows? I don't know what they would be using. And that's basically the way that those cows sometimes, and I can't say for all cows, but a lot of cows will finish up in a feedlot for the last 6 weeks of their life as well and fed grain. And it can still be called grass-fed if that's the case. If a consumer wants to make sure that there's no grain, then they have to have grass-fed and grass-finished. In contrast, I suppose what we do is we breed our cattle. So our cattle are born on our property. We don't use any cattle in our when we sell beef as meat that isn't born on our property. And from that, we know that every cow has had it's been rotated. It's been rotated since birth. We know that they haven't had any chemical worming because 6 weeks between entering a paddock or a patch of grass will break your worm cycle. So we know that you shouldn't have a worm burden. Our cattle have free access to minerals. So we have a big mineral trailer. And in that mineral trailer, they choose what they want, but we basically have sulfur, copper, seaweed meal, dolomite, lime, and salt. And so they get to choose whatever they want, and it's really interesting to watch them at different times of the year. They'll take different amounts of each of those compounds and they choose. So, for example, in late winter, early spring, you might get lice. So we don't put anything on the back of the cow for the lice. What you'll find is that they'll start taking a lot of sulfur. And that sulfur, and that basically gets rid of any lice that you might have in the cows. And you see the stronger cows won't even get any lice, and the weaker cows might get a few lice on them, but they're all going for the sulfur. And so you're constantly filling the truck with sulfur.
Fantastic. And no, that's okay. I really, really like that idea, and I want to emphasize the contrast. Between maybe this conventional set stocked model of farming versus what you and many others are doing with the regenerative approach. And it's almost like you can put all these cattle, you know, in one big paddock for many months, rummaging around in their own feces, and then have to use chemicals like drenches, like antiparasitics, like vaccines to deal with the inevitable disease that gets generated from that type of management. Or you can rotate them regularly. As you said, you break the parasite life cycle. You actually obviate the need for any use of these type of chemicals. And it's just so elegant. It's a solution. The solution to the problem is proper management. On the topic of free access to different licks or to different minerals at different times of the life, that's a fascinating concept. Do you notice that, maybe when a heifer is pregnant or when a female cow is under calf, are they looking at certain minerals compared to maybe the steers or and when they're non-pregnant, for example?
Well, as we keep everyone in one herd, I can't answer that question, if that makes sense, because I've never we don't separate anybody. So we will have the mother, the baby calf, and then anyone that's growing out. They all stay together, and they all stay together in one herd. And that goes also for weaning. We use a weaning ring, which is like a little ring that goes into their nose, and it's got spikes so that when the calf goes to drink from its mother, the mother just pushes the calf away to cause less stress. So everybody is really having access to the same minerals. What I can tell you is that different times of the year, certain minerals disappear much faster than they do at other times of the year, rather than if it's a mother or a baby or a steer, because everybody stays in one big herd. So that's what I can tell you. What we do is before, probably the last 4 weeks before calving, we do add apple cider vinegar into the water. And everybody's having apple cider vinegar during that last 4 weeks before we're expecting birth. And that's supposed to help with the birthing process for the mothers.
Fascinating. So on to a poppy farm, just to clarify for the listeners, there's zero chemicals being used on either the pasture or the animals.
Correct. Absolutely correct. And what we've started doing just this year is that we've got a big worm farm, and so we're taking the worm juice that we're producing, and because we grow our baby chicks from day old to make sure that they're on organic soy-free food from day one, we're taking the bedding from the brooder, from the baby chicks, and we're putting that into a worm farm and collecting the worm juice. And then we've been spraying that out with some powdered milk and also some kelp onto the pasture. And that's made a huge difference, as well as we're really seeing some differences from doing that as well. So that's the only, if you want to call that a chemical, I don't call it a chemical, I call it a biological. So I suppose we're using biologicals to assist with everything else that we're doing.
Yeah, and I mean, that's fascinating. I think the level of control and the purity of that food chain, that I'm not aware of any farm who has as strict and as careful about the provenance, the chemical load and everything as Tall Poppy Farm, especially with the fact that you're making sure every animal is born on the property as well. So it's complete sovereignty over the entire growing process and the entire animal from birth all the way up to butchering. So I mean, it's an incredibly impressive level of attention and detail, which produces an absolutely delicious final product. So that's amazing and commendable. Can you talk a little bit about the specific breed of cattle that you use on Tall Poppy Farm? So tell us about that.
Okay, so I've chosen to use Dexter cattle, and I've chosen them because they're an old breed. They're naturally small. They're docile. They're just lovely. They come when they're called. And they're also a dual purpose animal. So, my original thought was that I was going to have time to milk someone and have a house cow. That hasn't happened. too many other things to do, and they do naturally, because they are an old breed and they haven't been genetically modified or altered, or we don't use dwarfs, you get good marbling on grass. So they're used to, that's what they're meant, they're from Ireland, so they're used to the cold, which, as I said, we're at 650 metres, it's cold here. So they're used to the cold, you get good marbling, and you also get a good carcass cutout at around that 60-65%. I have had cattle that have cut out at 70%. So what I do keep is a log of cows who the sire was, and then any, we put both steers and heifers into the beef market, so we don't discriminate that way. And we also I also have a list of every animal that we've processed, the cuts that have come out of that animal, so that we can do some selective breeding that way. So we're just about to put a Galloway bull over our Dexters. We have a nice group of Dexter heifers that we've now bred, and we've decided that for next year, so 2023, which will be 2023, which will be 2024 calves, we will put a Galloway bull over those Dexters to get some hybrid vigour without sacrificing. We've had a bit of a play around, and we've found that we won't sacrifice the quality of the meat by doing that, and we'll get some nice marbling and still keep a nice small animal as well.
Yeah, and that's great. And I think for people who are unaware of the nuances of cattle, most of the cattle that they might be eating in terms of conventionally raised could be Angus, perhaps for Hereford, and that's the Angus particularly a much more selectively bred animal, if I'm not wrong. And compared to the Dexters, the Dexters who have perhaps like the Ngunis, which was a breed of African cattle, and listen to my podcast with Brian Usher about those cattle, is that they're a deeper gene pool, and they're robust animals. There's less kind of hands-on work needed. Is that correct?
Look, that's correct. And I have one of my favorite cow, if I'm allowed to have a favorite cow, she will be 15 this year, and she's pregnant and she will be calving. I mean, that's the other thing, is you've got fantastic longevity in these cows. They calve, they do tiny little calves, so they calve easily and the calves grow relatively quickly. And because it is a dual purpose animal, there's lots of milk for the calf, and they tend to do very, very well. They're great cows, and the beef is, well, I'm biased. I will say I'm biased, but the beef is fantastic. And they do cut out at it much smaller, so you're not getting like a big monster Angus steak. You're getting something that's smaller, and so it's quite manageable for people. I think we sell only a half or a quarter, so half a cow is about around that 50 to 60 kilo weight, which isn't a lot of beef when you're talking about an Angus, where it could be three or four times that amount, where a quarter is 25 kilos. So, again, not a lot of beef for people to manage to put in their freezer.
Yeah, and the tall poppy beef tastes absolutely amazing. It's, the highest quality beef I've tasted. So all the hard work with the rotation and all the attention to detail when it comes to land management, obviously is manifesting and showing in the quality of the beef. And for those specifically, I'll just clarify, when you mean dual purpose, you meant that they're suitable both as for beef cattle and as dairy cattle. Is that correct?
That's correct. And there are quite a few. We haven't tested our herd, but there are quite a few that are also A2 milk as well, if that's something that people are looking for. I haven't had time to milk any of my cows yet. That's one of my goals. I'm not sure that when it's going to happen, but it's one of my goals.
yeah, great. So talk a little bit now, if you can, about how you sell your produce and how you access customers, and what is the relationship that you have with your customers compared to a more conventionally run farm?
Okay, so I suppose the way we sell our product is that with the beef, I'll talk specifically about the beef. We did move out of the beef, selling the beef directly to customers. It became very, very complex and difficult during COVID. And it's very today I've had a very exciting meeting this morning with another local farmer who actually has a boning room on her property, so which is still licensed. So we will be hopefully moving to work with her and her boning room, which is local. And so that's fantastic. But during COVID, things changed a lot. But the way we like to sell our beef is to know all of our customers. People know who we are. They tend to be repeat customers. We're very small. We're not a large farm. At 74 acres, you can't have that many cows. So we only do around 10 steers, cows per year. That's all that we do. So it's just been very complex, but hopefully, after this fantastic meeting today, there is a boning room available for us to use in the Macedon Ranges, which is extremely exciting. And, we will be able to, commence that later next year, to do that. And I suppose the best way to find our beef is to go on our website and send me an email, that's generally the way it works. But you have to take a half or a quarter.
Yeah.
And that's, we don't do, you can't just buy rump. You can't just buy fillet steak. You have to buy the whole cow. We provide the bones free of charge. So we encourage people to make bone broth. We have a kitchen that we put in our barn, which will be part of our cellar door with our wine, and I hope to be able to do some training of people on how to make bone broth if they don't know how, or what to do with some of the more difficult cuts that they, you know, like the beef ribs or any of those other cuts that people don't know what to do with.
Yeah, and I really like that you're selling your meat as, you know, in bulk, as a fixed amount, and you have to get all the different cuts. And I think the reason why I think that's important for a number of reasons, but we're in a process of re-educating customers and re-educating the public into understanding that to eat an animal and to honor that animal is, you're not just getting only eye fillet, you're not only getting scotch fillets. There's all these different cuts to the animal, including the bones, and that make up the animal, and each of them have, you know, are delicious and are nutrient dense in their own way. And understanding how to cook them properly is part of the whole process of enjoying the meat and just getting in touch with the source of the food and how it's raised and the reality of the makeup of the animal. So I really like the fact that you're operating or dealing just with the customers. And I really encourage everyone to get in touch with a farmer, to meet a farmer, to come onto their property and if they allow you, and when they have an open day, and just truly understand and where their food is coming from. And you can see, if you go to Tall Poppy Farm, how carefully managed and how particular all these processes are, and all of them are necessary to give such a high quality product. So, I mean, the idea of having boning on farm, to talk a little bit about that and maybe the difficulties there are in terms of vertically integrating the whole process onto one property.
Yeah, look, it's extremely difficult. So the abattoir is completely separate, and our local abattoir now will only process an animal if that has to be organised through the boning room or the butcher. So you have to be a licensed butcher. So I couldn't I can't just ring the abattoir and say, I've got five steers, can I bring them in? And they'd say no. The actual person that's processing those animals or cutting them up, hanging them and cutting them up, has to organise that, which is a little bit different to how it used to be. We generally hang our beef for 3 weeks, so we try and dry age it for 3 weeks, at least 2 weeks, between 2 and 3 weeks, depending on the availability in the boning room. And it's all vacuum sealed into generally 500 gram packs, So even though you're getting 25 or 50 kilos or 100 kilos of beef, it's still all in 500 gram packs, which is generally for two people would eat that. But the process is all controlled in Victoria through PrimeSafe. And there's a lot of rules and regulations, as I'm sure anyone who has a on-farm boning room can attest to. It's not a specialisation that we want to do, but we're pretty excited that a farmer down the road has gone to the trouble to do that, and that we can get access to that. So that's pretty exciting.
That's great. And it is a little bit frustrating that certain regulations can come in the way of keeping the process of processing an animal, you know, in one place. Obviously they're there for a reason, but there is a line where, you know, enforcing regulation becomes onerous rather than helpful. But great news that you can bring that boning and that processing to a local area. That's great. And I really want to talk quickly, because you mentioned it in passing, the third pillar of what you're offering on Tall Poppy Farm, which is wine. Can you give us a bit of an idea about what that's about?
Yes. So we have a 5-acre vineyard, which we've been restoring. And what we've done is we don't use any glyphosate, which is different to a lot of other vineyards. Vineyards seem to have a lot of chemicals put onto them. We don't do that. So we have invested in an undervine mower, which we're just about to take delivery of to mow. So what it basically does is it mows along and then goes between the vine and then comes out. So because you need to keep the competition from the grass or the weeds away from the vine to be able to have any grapes. We've using a lot of, I will call them biologicals, so things like not just sulfur or copper as a spray. We're using nutrient type sprays, things like kelp, calcium, boron, molybdenum, different types of sprays. We've also done some work with biodynamics as well, and spraying those and using those as a foliar spray, and spraying those in our vineyard as well. We use the sheep during the winter time to go through, and again, while they're mowing the grass, they're also dropping their manure and their urine and providing nutrition for the vines. So this year we're hoping to get quite a good crop finally out of the vines, and we will be producing a pet nat, which is a natural sparkling wine made in the ancient tradition, and a sparkling wine made in the traditional method, so a champagne method, but you're not allowed to call it whatever you're allowed to call it. We'll also be doing a sparkling Shiraz, which is not from our grapes. It will be grape sourced from Heathcote sparkling Shiraz. And then we have a small vineyard over in limestone where there is some Cabernet and Shiraz grapes, and we'll basically be putting those and making a small batch of red, which we put into American oak for 2 years and before we bottle it. So it's not really that's my husband's thing, is the wine. But we've been working on all of our spot foliar sprays for the vineyard are done as per the biodynamic calendar. Not necessarily just biodynamic sprays, but just using their calendar of when we spraying by the moon. And hopefully we'll get some beautiful wine this year that will come out.
Fantastic. I mean, that sounds amazing and yeah, quite tasty.
And also sulfur as well. So we don't add sulfur into it either. So
yeah. Great. And as you mentioned, your property, I mean, it's 74 acres. You're only doing 10 steers a year. It's a very much a boutique, high quality, small batch product in every sense of the word. Is there any plan on from you or from Tall Poppy to perhaps expand or to lease more land in terms of taking on more animals, or what's the future plan?
Look, there really isn't an opportunity. Well, I don't have any more money unless someone wants to give me some land to use. We don't really have any plans to expand. What we do have is the Salador. We have half an acre, which we're also growing vegetables on. And we're hoping that once we get our Salador license, that we will open on the weekends, and we will have some of our, like, we've grown some beautiful garlic. We'll have some of that for sale. We've got lots of rhubarb, you know, whatever's abundant in the garden, that we'll also have that for sale. Again, using all the same principles. So again, no chemicals, at all, and using all the same principles and using the animals through the veggie garden. So that's really, the main things. The other things that we do, are thinking of doing is that all of what we call spent hens. So a hen is productive on our farm for a period of about 18 months, 2 years. And that's because the organic food that we buy is so expensive. We need the hens the hens that we buy ovulate every 22 hours, and we need them to basically produce an egg every day because it doesn't matter whether the hen produces an egg or does or doesn't produce an egg, it still eats the same quantity of food. So what we would like to do is at the end of that 18-month, two-year period is process those birds at the abattoir and have those birds for sale as a casserole. They're beautiful if you put them in the pressure cooker, you pull all the pulled meat off, and then you use the bones to make your bone broth. And again, that's something that I think it's an education, because I don't want the birds to be just wasted, because they've been on organic food since day one, they've had soy-free food since day one, and they've been rotated around these great pastures that have had no chemicals on there. So they're still a great product, and we would like to start processing, well, have those processed and have those available for sale. So I suppose that's an expansion or an extension of what we're doing. We can't compromise. Well, I can't compromise on the beef because I need to breed them. It'd be much easier. I could probably have 30 head or at least 20 head of steers going through if I didn't have to have the mothers and the calves and grow everyone out from birth. But again, that would be a big compromise, and that's not something that I want to do at this particular point in time. So there won't be any extension of beef. I'm happy to work with other farmers who would be interested in growing Dexters and following our model. Great, contact me. That would be fantastic. I'm happy to mentor other farmers who are interested in following what we do. We're also thinking that we might do a run of meat birds maybe once a year, but we've done that once, and the cost of doing that was very high, and I suppose we'd need to test the market and see if people were willing to pay the price for a meat bird. We've done a test run, and look, we do it for ourselves, and we still grow our own meat birds for ourselves, but we also understand that it has to be commercial, and the cost would probably shock most people when you can buy a chicken at the supermarket for $11. And I honestly do not know where they feed them, because we could not produce one for $11.
Yeah.
By the time we bought the chicken, blew the chicken out, and had the chicken processed without even putting any profit on that is, I mean, you're probably talking about $50 a kilo for a chicken, and people don't like that. They're not used to that.
No, and obviously the reason why your Coles chicken costs $11 is because there's massive economies of scale, and they're being fed all manner of commodity grain with all manner of industrial herbicide and pesticide inside. So The quality is costs money, and I think as part of educating consumers and educating people about where their food came from is making people realize that if they want to invest in their good quality food and therefore their health, it's going to cost money. Supporting regenerative agriculture through by buying directly from your farmer is the best way to do that. So that's a great way to leave it, Paula. So thank you so much for sharing your knowledge and your wisdom and a bit about how your farm operates. If someone's interested in getting their hands on some tall poppy produce, what's the best way to do that or to contact you in general?
We have three retail outlets where our eggs are available. Those are at Whisked at the Pran Market, Rhubarb at the Preston Market, and Twinkleberries at the Vic Market. Or they can join a hub. We have several hubs, one in East Melbourne, one in Mont Albert, and another one in Point Cook. So there are three hubs that we have at the moment. They can pick up directly from the farm, or they can just send me an email. That's the easiest way, tallpoppyfarm@gmail.com. It's pretty easy.
Great, fantastic. We'll leave that information in the video below. So any parting notes or anything that you'd like to share before we wrap up?
I think just remember that an egg isn't an egg, and to really try and ask some questions. Does the farmer grow the chicken from day one, or are they buying hens as layers? And look, it's just what you want, so that you know what you're getting. Are the eggs washed? Are the eggs not washed? Are the hens moved? Do they move over a whole property, or are they just kept on 30 acres continuously, mm-hmm. or 50 acres continuously? Are they moved around that particular property? And I suppose the same with your beef. Ask the same questions. Has the cow spent the whole time on that property, or is it just being grown there for a period of time? Just so you know what you're getting. Doesn't matter what the answer is, just know what you're getting. Know the questions to ask so you can make your own decision.
Exactly, and being an informed, intentional consumer. So very well said. So thank you so much, Paula. Thanks for your time. And I would encourage everyone to get in touch if they're interested in trying out some of the delicious tall poppy produce. So thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Regenerative Health Podcast. I hope this episode helped you better understand some aspect of improving your lifestyle for optimal health. If you enjoyed this episode, then share it out with friends and family. Leaving a 5-star review on Apple or Spotify podcasts also helps spread the message. Thank you, and see you next time.